It's 15 minutes after 7 o'clock. Daniel Pipes is the president of the Middle East Forum and a distinguished visiting fellow at the Hoover Institute at Stanford University. His website, danielpipes.org, is one of the internet's most accessed sources of specified information on the Middle East and Islam. The Boston Globe has said if Pipes' admonitions had been heeded, there might never have been a 9/11. The Washington Post deems him, quote, perhaps the most prominent US scholar on radical Islam. He's in Australia as a guest of the Australia, Israel and Jewish Affairs Council on a speaking tour. And he's visited Sydney, Canberra, Melbourne and Brisbane. We often speak to Daniel Pipes, always speak to him when he's in Australia. He's on the line. Dr. Pipes, good morning.
Good morning, Alan.
Could I just raise this with you? I've got an email this morning which says this. I don't watch that ABC program Q&A, although apparently am regularly featured on it. But an email says, I was appalled by the treatment meted out to Daniel Pipes on Q&A last night. Dr. Pipes was seated next to Dud Cameron and a woman of Islamic faith. How Daniel Pipes sat there and took the rubbishing he received is beyond me. I would have forgiven him for walking out. I was ashamed to be an Australian watching the treatment he received. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, let's put it this way. It wasn't the highest intellectual discourse. For example, someone in the audience asked me if I still believe that Barack Obama had been raised as a child as a Muslim. And I said yes. Said, first of all, I don't believe he's a Muslim today. I do accept that he's converted to Christianity, but I think the evidence is quite overwhelming that as a child he was raised a Muslim. Well, the catcalls, the insults, the vulgarities that followed were just astonishing. I mean, there's no discussion whether the evidence I have is correct or not. It was just calling me pedantic and the like. And it just, what kind of debate is this? But I might add, this is not.
Some of us are used to.
Not exclusive to Australia. I think of the United States.
Some of us are used to it, Dr. Pipes, I have to tell you. Mm. Let me just go back a bit, because when I spoke to you most recently, which was about a year and a half ago, you were confident that the war in Iraq would lead to a reduction in terrorism, has it?
I think that was a long time ago, not a year and a half. The war in Iraq has led to a very great amount of terrorism in Iraq itself.
Yep.
But I think there's a reduction outside Iraq. I think more to the point today is the fact that I'm very pessimistic about the future of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Very pessimistic.
Pessimistic. Yep. I think the enormous effort, especially the U.S. Government has made in those two countries with hundreds of billions of dollars and thousands of lives lost, is forlorn. I think that as Western troops leave over the next year, the continued active presence of Iran in Iraq and of Pakistan in Afghanistan means that what we have tried to do will dissolve and erode, and eventually 5-10 years from now will barely even be visible.
See, your argument, just to explain the argument, and whenever it was, we had this discussion, it could have been more than a year and a half ago, but your argument was if the West could succeed in Iraq, you'd diminish the appeal of militant Islam, and you said to me that militants melt away when they see their cause losing.
But I'm saying they're not losing.
Yeah,
right.
Not losing.
Right.
Which brings us, of course, to this Libya issue now, because there are already cheer squads at the likely demise of Gaddafi.
Right.
Rebel troops are moving into Tripoli. We've had this in relation to Mubarak. Since Mubarak is gone, no one cares to analyse what's happening in Egypt, where Christian churches are being burnt down and Christians are being murdered. Do you think is there any leadership in the West which, on the one hand, says, well, it's all very well to talk about getting rid of the bloke that's there, but what are we putting in his place?
Good question. No, there isn't much. I'd make a distinction between Egypt and Libya. Egypt I see as a coup d'etat. In other words, the military leadership in Egypt said to Mubarak, go, you're too unpopular, we don't want you around anymore. And what one has is continuity, not complete continuity. As you point out, churches are being burnt, and there are other new issues as well. But basically, the new leader, whose name is Sentawi, has the same priorities, namely staying in power, as the old one, Mubarak. So it's not a fundamental change there. In Libya, however, as it appears that Gaddafi regime is about finished, it's a true revolution. We have no idea who's coming next. But the really dismaying thing is that the NATO forces have been supporting the rebels, and we have no idea who the rebels are.
Yes, without knowing who they are.
Now, Gaddafi is loathsome, but he is isolated. he may be succeeded by an equally loathsome group who are not isolated, who are in fact part of a larger Islamist worldwide movement. And this could mean that we go from the frying pan into the fire.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are chances that some powerful Islamic entity is hiding behind the scenes, waiting for the right moment to pounce, which happened, of course, in Iran in 78, 79.
Exactly, exactly. Now, I'm hoping that smarter people know more than I do, and that really we can be assured that this is a good group of people we're backing, but I'm not confident of that at all.
Yes, I mean, do you really think that Western forces are winning this battle?
Western forces are critical. There have been 7,500 sorties since March. And at first, they were somewhat haphazard. But as the months have gone by, they're increasingly coordinated with the rebels on the ground.
Yeah.
There are direct communications between the two. And note the mission creep. What began as protecting Benghazi has turned into overthrowing the Gaddafi.
So it may well be, that Western forces, and we hear about them every day and what great success they're having and so on, could be bringing some of the worst enemies of civilization to power.
The absolute barbarians, exactly. And Italy is on the front line here because there's an island of Italy called Lampedusa, only a few hundred kilometers from Libya. And it has already been a target of immigrants, of refugees and the like. It could be swamped. It could be huge numbers of people turning up or fleeing from this new Islamist government in Tripoli. Could be.
Can I just bring you closer to home? Because we had people in Australia accused of plotting to attack the Holsworthy Army base, and they were rejoicing in the fact that the crippling drought that Australia had been through and the Black Saturday bushfires in February 2009, which killed 170 people, were all part of Allah's will to punish the filthy people of Australia. Should we be worried about that language?
Indeed. It is not only incitement, but it is a view that suggests that Australia is the enemy. It is a form of sedition. It's deeply worrisome. And indeed, this sort of language can be found, can be found throughout the West, especially in the UK. But it's found everywhere. And I think it's this sort of approach and the sort of language that doesn't get enough attention from the authorities.
No, well, I mean, in the prosecution brief against the men charged in August 2009 over this alleged planned attack on the army base at Holsworthy, transcripts of conversations were produced which described Australians as having, quote, infidels in their midst who cause great damage to Islam. Is this a kind of quote-unquote battle that we should be worried about, or do we just ignore it?
Definitely, it's a battle we should be worried about. What we have in the West is immigration and conversion of individuals who subscribe to the Islamist ideology. I see Islamism as the third great totalitarianism. First was fascism, and then communism, and now Islamism. And each of them seeks a global hegemony. Each of them places great emphasis on the state over the individual. Each one is ready to use every brutal means necessary in order to gain worldwide hegemony. We defeated the first fascism in World War II. We defeated the second in the Cold War. And now we have the third one. Now, it's different in many ways. It's not Western in origin. It has a religious quality, but it is no less fearsome than the others. Indeed, in some ways, it's more so. It doesn't have a great power. There's no Germany or Soviet Union. But on the other hand, the numbers of adherents are far greater.
So we are facing an ongoing war against Islamic militant supremacy.
Exactly. And it has a medieval quality. It argues that if only Muslims returned to the way they lived centuries ago, then they would be strong again. And the essence of that, is the Sharia, is Islamic law, which holds, to simplify it very much, that Muslim is superior to non-Muslim, male is superior to female.
Well, there are campaigns in Britain and indeed here to impose Sharia law.
There are indeed. And it takes two forms. One is to try and apply it universally, and the other is to create enclaves where only Muslims live and Sharia is applied in full.
Mm. So just before you go, just back to Libya, what should we be concerned about in relation to Libya?
Well, we should watch closely who takes over now.
Yeah, and Egypt?
Egypt, I think there is less concern in that.
But given that your concern is about Islamic supremacy, these could be significant footholds, could they not? And what we said before, Western forces may indeed be instrumental in bringing civilization's worst enemies to power.
In Libya, yes. But in Egypt, I think that both the liberals who are on the street of Tahrir Square back in January, February, and the Islamists who are burning Christian churches are somewhat marginal. It is right. Military, industrial leadership, the generals who count in
right.
Egypt.
Afghanistan?
Afghanistan is, I think, headed for great trouble, as is Iraq.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, not much good news.
Good
sorry.
To talk to you, but thank you for your time, and we'll talk again, I'm sure.
Always enjoy speaking.
Indeed. That's Dr. Daniel Pipes, who is the president of the Middle East Forum, a distinguished visiting fellow at the Hoover Institute at Stanford University, one of the world's most preeminent authorities on the issue of the Middle East and Islam.